Hello, and welcome to the Movies You Forgot podcast with me, your host, Adam Richmond. And joining me, as ever, in the task of remembering things he forgot, Mr. Joe Devine. Hi, Joe. How's it going?
I'm good, man. How are you doing?
So, a good thing happened the other day.
Oh, yeah?
It was getting to be late in the evening, and I haven't really spent much time with my wife watching stuff. I watched Taskmaster. She watches Love is Blind, or, you know, one of those programs. I don't want to be... anyway.
I don't want to be.
I don't want to be, but, you know, come on. We all know.
Sure.
We all know what that means.
We all know.
So, she... I don't want to get into the
No, I don't want to be. You don't want to be. I don't want to be.
No, but also I don't want to get in, like you know, two nights ago. I don't want to get into, like, what should we watch together? It's there's not enough time in the world.
No.
There's no energy.
Nobody wants to be.
Something just needs to be on.
Yeah.
So, guess what?
What is it?
Guess what? Something's just on. It's on all week, it turns out, I think, on BBC Three or something. Lady Bird. It's 5 minutes in. And I think, oh yeah, let's watch Lady Bird, for God's sake.
And this is a Greta Gerwig film, a big deal at the time, isn't it?
It is, and I remember. Do you want to hear my 2-word letterboxed review?
I'd love to.
Lady Bored. Yeah.
Yeah.
1.5. I gave it 1.5 stars.
Yeah.
Everyone was all over this, and I was. I think I might have over-egged my disinterest.
Yeah, sure. That sounds like the sort of thing you would do.
But I am a big Greta Gerwig fan. I loved Frances Ha, and
yes.
So I was disappointed. I felt burned. Anyway, pops on the telly. Wife hasn't watched it. It's exactly, it just slotted right in.
Perfect.
Choice taken out.
Yeah.
And it just goes back to what I said a couple of episodes ago. It's all about when you watch something. It's really good. It's a good film. It's just very, just really nicely done.
And who's the boy?
There's a couple of boys, but the main boy is Chalamet.
Yes.
And he's so disgusting. I think he's supposed to be.
Yeah.
But anyway, it just really hammered home something that I'd said a couple of weeks ago. And it was just nice. It's nice when films come on the telly. I've got DVDs. I never watch them, but when they come on the telly, I think, ooh,
yes,
I'm going to watch it.
Well, it's interesting, isn't it? Because, you know, one of the things you've alluded to there is the absence of choice, or at least the passivity of choice, because you still make
perception,
a choice,
mate?
To
perception.
Perception, yeah.
Passivity. You what's still... passivity?
Passivity.
Yeah. What's that, you know, mean?
Well, it's your.
What do you think it means?
That's a really good way of phrasing that question. What I think it means is that you still made a choice, but the choice you made was more passive than active. So by that I mean that if you've been, you know, scrolling through, flicking through Netflix, and Ladybug had been there. Ladybird?
Ladybug. Ladybird. That's just
Ladybird.
That's you
had
doing
been
your
on there.
Funny bits.
Yeah. Yeah. You would have you may not have clicked on it, but to click on it would be an active choice to watch it. Whereas if it's on TV, you make a passive choice to not watch it. And that's what I mean by the passivity of choice.
Yeah, you're very light on your feet. You've done marvellously well there.
And that is literally what I meant, though. I mean, I don't know why you think I'm light on my feet. I'm very heavy on my feet. Clunky, if anything. I'm a big boy. I wear size 14 shoes. You can't tiptoe around passively in those shoes. Every movement is active and determined.
Yeah.
And, you know, hey, I don't want to be, you know?
You don't want to be.
I don't want to be.
Welcome to Movies You Forgot, the podcast in which we chew over films we forgot we'd watched in the first place.
That's right, yeah.
We'd even seen these films. Can you imagine that? And on today's episode, after that lovely preamble, we are doing, I believe this is your choice.
Half Nelson, that's right.
The 2006 flick, co-directed by Ryan Fleck and Anna Boden. They also wrote it. Starring, of course, everyone's favourite, Ryan Gosling, another Ryan.
Gozzers.
And it's 107 mins, and let's see what the Letterboxd has to say about it.
Oh, yes, please.
I never say this before, but like they've got something in caps, and that's like the tagline. Secrets don't let go. Now, that doesn't make any sense.
What?
Yeah, exactly.
That's very weird. Is that the tagline? Secrets don't let go. Can secrets let go? Are secrets not... I mean, do they have a... Can they hold on?
They've got a grip. Oh, they've got a grip. Despite his dedication to the junior high students who fill his classroom, idealistic teacher Dan Dunn leads a secret life of addiction that the majority of his students will never know. But things change when a troubled student, Dre, makes a startling discovery of his secret life, causing a tenuous bond between the two that could either end disastrously or provide a catalyst of hope.
Ah, secrets don't let go.
Is that his secret?
I don't know. It still doesn't make any sense.
This flick was it was the big Sundance indie flick of the year.
Was it?
Well, may I say Sundance? It's even if it wasn't in Sundance, it feels like it would have been.
Yes.
It was the one that landed on these shores, the UK shores, and we were all supposed to get very excited about it, and we suitably did. Did you see this at the old cinema?
I did not see this in the cinema, no.
Were you in 2006?
Well, I was 15 for most of the year, and then I was 16 for some of the year.
Yeah, this isn't in your wheelhouse.
It wasn't in my wheelhouse. I was at secondary school in North Wales. And actually, I wouldn't have had time because I was embroiled in a confusing relationship with a teacher who took crack cocaine. Hey? But no, I wasn't. That's not true.
Let's just stop the fucking glib shit.
Okay.
And you just like, what were you doing?
Do you want to hear something serious then?
No, I just what want you to, what were you watching?
What was I doing?
No, what were you watching? I don't care who you were or what you were doing. What fucking films are you watching?
At 15 years old?
Yeah.
Happy Gilmore. You know, I was watching the Lee Evans stand-up routines. I was watching Lord of the Rings, probably was into the Harry Potter films. I guess they hadn't all come out by that point. I dabbled in some artier films. As I mentioned last week, Papa used to take me to see whatever the hell was on at the local art cinema. And, you know, I remember watching The Doors at a young age, these sorts of things, some music biopics. But to be very honest with you...
Yeah, but if you're in Wales, you're not with Papa, are you?
No, well, you know, that would be in the summers.
Oh, so was it Summers with Papa?
Summers with Papa, and I that does mean that...
I'd love to see that film.
if there were key, you know, Oscar-worthy releases, which tend to be later in the year, or art house-related releases, if they didn't come out in the summer, I didn't see them as a teenager. There was a local Cineworld in my part of North Wales, but really I was making use of it to go and see Anchorman or whatever, you know, not bloody Joyeux Noël, you know?
Is this why you're obsessed by always going to see all the films that are up for the Oscars?
Yeah, partly, probably.
Nostalgia,
you know, also
remembering Daddy.
I mean, it very well may be, you know. Also, to be honest, I think it's mostly to help me have some form of identity.
But why would you want the identity of the guy who watches films that are nominated for Oscars? That's like the shittest identity you could pick.
Yeah, well, you know, you got to have one. And listen, secrets don't hold on. So it's, you know, it's just, it is what it is, Adam. did you see this in the cinema then?
Oh, absolutely. I would have seen
absolutely.
Absolutely.
Of course, you probably went to a film festival to watch it in a cinema, didn't you? And clapped at the end.
I would have been reading about this in my many film magazines, and they would have been writing about this and
in my many film diaries.
That's what I wanted to talk about Lady Bird. I had a whole bit of, I've got a new plan for how I basically want to ban film criticism.
Yes.
And all film writing.
All film writing.
Unless it's just biographical. Unless it's autobiographical, I mean, not biographical.
Yeah. Sure.
You can have biographies of your main film people. But unless you're writing about film to just reveal something about yourself, all film criticism should be banned. That's what I was thinking about when I watched Lady Bird. And the same with Half Nelson. Because I understand there's a reason why they make a film and they spend a lot of money. And the only way to get people excited is by getting film writers, to tease it and write about it. And then if you do that enough and if there's enough buzz, that buzz turns into mainstream, like kind of hooks into the mainstream.
Yeah.
And Joe Schmo and Jill Schmo think, oh, I heard about that, and they'll go and see it. The problem is, little Jimmy Richmond, by the time I get to go and see Lady Bird, it's so smothered.
That's right, yeah.
In all this filth, that it's always going to be shit.
Yes.
So basically all there should be is everyone, what they can do is they can just say if they liked a film or if they didn't like a film. And that's it, okay? And it all gets fed into the computer. There would be no aggregate. There would be no Rotten Tomato, like 90% of people like this film. There's none of that. It's just yes or no. And if you see, the thing is, you have to seek out this information. If a film comes out, you have to seek out, like, you know, you get told it's coming out in a kind of Orwellian missive.
Yeah.
New Scarlett Johansson action comedy vehicle.
Yeah.
Directed by Doug Liman.
That's going to work.
Okay. That's all you know. At some point, the yeses and nos will start filtering in. And that's all you know.
Okay. Do you want to hear my idea?
Yeah. I've spent a lot of time talking about my idea. It'd be really selfish if I didn't let you tell me about your idea that you've only just thought of. I've been thinking about my idea all week, and you've just come up with this idea in like 5 seconds. So your idea is as valid as my idea.
Thank you for saying that. I think that's very kind of you to say that.
You're welcome.
I disagree. I think yours is far more valid than mine. but you're a kind man. Now, it combines two things, okay? First, the problem it seeks to solve is the problem that you described earlier. A film comes out, the necessary machine work has to promote it to an extent where it has a material impact on your ability to neutrally react to the film. Yeah, that's the problem we are trying to resolve here. Your Lady Bird comes out, everyone hypes it up, and then you go, okay, well, this better be fucking good then, because everyone said it's good, and instantly your expectations for it diminish your ability to enjoy what you may well have enjoyed if you hadn't had that experience. Now, Joe, that's the problem to solve. Yes,
you've some thing is, you know, your whole thing is delivering long uneditable spiels.
Yeah,
but you've got to allow me to interject and say,
yeah, please do. Yeah,
you've got to say, you've absolutely hit the nail. That sound is the sound of hammer on nail.
Make the sound with your mouth.
Don't just barrel along. Pause for breath. It's almost like you're scared that if you allow me to sort of chip in, that the whole thing will come to a crash.
You'll move the conversation along, and I'll have to go, can I finish my point?
I'm definitely going to let you finish your point, but I just want you to, you know, let it breathe, yeah?
Okay.
You don't...
Okay. No, this is good. Tell me more. Let it breathe. I've sold the audience. I'm here. I'm saying, hey, guys.
Absolutely.
Have you ever noticed this problem in your life? And hey, my product is going to solve this problem for you.
Right. So
pause. Take a breath.
What What's the solution that you've only just thought of because you've only just realized this is a problem because I told you it was one?
Well, I mean, I knew it was a problem before. I'd never thought about solving it, and that's where I'll give you credit. But now you've inspired me to great ideas. Here it is. It's a two-part plan, okay? The first part is ad block, okay? Ad now, hoc. You know ad block?
Oh, not sorry, ad hoc. I thought you said ad hoc.
The first part is ad hoc, and I'll work it out as I'm talking. No, the first part is ad block. Now, ad block, for those who don't know,
listen,
is a...
Everyone knows what ad block is.
Well, I'm just... Not everyone does.
Listen,
so
no, listen,
you know,
listen,
I'm just gonna,
listen. No, listen.
You want me to... Okay,
listen,
I'll move
I'm not gonna,
on. I'll move
I'm
on.
Not going to let you do okay. this amount of fucking...
No worries. Okay, I'll get straight to it. It's a Chrome extension that prevents you as a user being able to see advertising on websites. So when you're watching YouTube, you have AdBlock on. You don't have to watch the YouTube adverts. It's excellent. It's free, right?
So can you tell me what
imagine
the internet
now,
wait, hang on a sec. Can you tell me what the internet is?
The internet is a series of computer networks where all computers in the world are connected together. Via these networks through use of satellite and fiber optic cable buried underneath the ground. And,
okay, right. So part one, it's an ad blocker.
Ad block, but it is ad block applied to your life. Now, I believe there are fantasy and sci-fi stories that have this idea already. Imagine if you could take ad block off your computer and apply it to your entire life. If you don't want to see that advert on that billboard as you're driving, it'll blur. Right?
Will it mute? Will it, mute?
It will mute.
Will it mute,
it will mute
the person at work who kind of goes?
It will.
Have you seen?
Yeah.
So like, so it's kind of a Black Mirror episode.
It's a Black Mirror episode, and it's a human interface thing. You got your glasses, you got your earbuds, whatever. It's like, it works. I don't know how it works. It's AI. It's robots. Yeah.
So what's
the
part
second
two?
Part two is. And very specifically, it ad blocks all stuff about films. Right. So that's your first thing. The second thing is a phone notification system, an app, whatever, that tells you at a random time, it's irrelevant, it's not the same for everyone, a film, one film a week, it sends you one. It tells you if you can go and see it in the cinema or if it's on a streaming service and you watch it. And you watch it without knowing anything about it, apart from, maybe you recognize an actor in it on the poster or whatever. You've never seen a review. You haven't heard of it before. And you come to it with a completely neutral experience. And once you've seen that film, the ad block registers and it stops blocking information about it. And that's how you get around it. And it's called...
No, the second part is called Mubi, and it already exists.
Does it? What's Mubi?
So this film, Half Nelson, it's a tricky one because I remember thinking it was perfectly fine, and rewatching it, I realised why I totally forgot most of it. I found most of it quite boring.
Yeah.
It's very well, it's all just indie. It's such an indie film. It's well shot, it's well acted, and that's all fine. But do you think this film is about a well-meaning teacher? He's not well-meaning, actually. He's a kind of insufferable, up his own ass, liberal...
Drug addict.
He gets caught by one of his students smoking crack. But like, it's very much nothing. It's a very much a nothing happens kind of film. Here's my proposition to you.
Uh-huh.
A pop song written in a minor key is still a pop song, right?
Yes.
Do you get what I'm saying?
I totally get what you're saying.
I do
understand. Yeah.
This, I could spell it out for you. This film,
is a minor key pop song.
It thinks it's making these really kind of smart, understated choices. When you think there's going to be a big bit of drama, it surprises you. But it's still a bloody pop song. It's a frustrating one at that as well, because I just kept thinking, what is this film about? What is this film about?
No, that's interesting, the what is this film about thing. I mean, you asked me this before, And I'm always surprised when we talk about a film and you think about what it's about, because I literally never do that. I watch the film and I go, oh yeah, that's happened, and I felt this way about it. Oh, that's the end of the film. I don't ever then retrospectively go, well, I suppose the writer was making a comment about this, or was alluding to this, or this was the theme. I hear that for the first time when you do it.
But what else is a film for?
I don't know, just to kill 2 hours.
But this is a really slow way of killing 2 hours. Because like, if it's not about anything, like, well,
it's about tone, it's about feelings. For me, it's about like feeling different to how I felt before I started watching the film.
But this film kind of, it's very particularly about race in some regard.
Yeah.
He's white, and most of the students he teaches are not. And there's the kid who catches him is a young black girl, and she's on the cusp of getting snarled up in with a bad crowd. And so there's a part of the film that's about, you kind of, I'm watching it thinking, is this a classic horrible like white savior film?
Yeah.
About a white liberal teacher versus the kind of demonized black drug dealer. Is that what this is about?
I don't know that it is. I mean, at times it feels as though it might be, and there are certainly elements of the film that, you know, watching this now, there were things I noticed that I didn't when I watched it 5 years ago. One of those is towards the beginning of the film, you watch Ryan Gosling teaching the children about history. He's a history teacher, and he's talking about, I think they call it dialectics, do they? Is that what it's called?
Yeah, dialectics.
Dialectics, which is the idea of two opposing forces and friction pushing against each other, how change happens, how history is written. These are junior high school students, you know, and this is, it's told to us within the film, this is a kind of college degree grade course or information that he's teaching them. At one point he gets hooked during class by who you assume is the principal of the school, who takes him outside and says, have you even opened the civil rights binder? And he says, hey, I'm Ryan Gosling. Hey, there's a lot of good stuff in the binder. There's a lot of good stuff in there. But, you know, he's disrespectful about it. And he essentially gives the impression that what he is doing, he believes to be far more impactful. And when I watched that 5 years ago, and Ryan Gosling is the hero, I thought, that's right, man. Be real with the kids, you know. You're doing something different. You aren't going to be trapped by the system, by the machine, by the man. You're gonna do the right thing. You're going to connect with these children on a human level and not be stuck in this, you know, these course schedules. What's the word that they use in schools? You know, the prescriptive learning. What's it called?
We all know what you mean. I know what you mean.
I can't really think of the word.
I'm too smart to tell you the word.
I agree with you. Yeah. So I'm too smart to remember it as well. Anyway, that's what I thought 5 years ago. I watch it now, and I notice for the first time that the principal of the school is a black woman who is asking this middle class white inner city school teacher, "Have you opened the civil rights binder that I gave you?" And he loves her. And I think, that kind of doesn't hit in the same way that it did, you know, when I watched it when I was younger. There are moments like that in the film that have that kind of white savior vibe to them. But I don't think that's what the film is about, because he doesn't save anybody. And he's a wreck.
That scene is a good example of if you're paying attention, perhaps, is this a satire of the white savior narrative? He is this feckless, useless, drug addicted white teacher who he's a bore.
Yeah.
Every time he's super sexy, he goes to a bar, he's hopped up on all the drugs that he's done, Some sexy girls always eye him up, and then the jump cut is him with the sexy girls. This is happens twice, and he's just boring off about something in politics. He's talking about the war, yeah, or he's talking about something else. And I think maybe the film's making fun of him, but it doesn't feel like they're doing it strongly enough, because he's so sexy.
Oh yeah.
And the film is so kind to him that if they are, I think maybe there's this sort of hint that they're doing that, but it's just like, it just never quite.
There are moments where the film is not that kind to him. I know what you're saying. And I think one of those scenes, by the way, Ryan Gosling does, cocaine bore very well. But there's one of these scenes, is he's picked up a woman at a bar. They've gone back to a hotel room. All of the shots are of him. You don't hear her talk. You barely ever see her. She's not in the room. Like, that's a really cool directional choice for me watching it. And all you see in here is him, first off, talking about politics, then talking about what he, you know, how the kids keep him focused, then talking about how he's not really addicted to the drugs that he's taking as he's taking the drugs. And at that moment, you know, that it's pathetic. I don't mean that in a like very prerogatory or accusatory way. If that was me in that situation, and I would do that, eating an ice cream and saying like, this is the last one, you know, it's pathetic and it's a lie and he's lying to himself, and we're watching him do that. And we're also watching him have knowledge of the fact that he's lying to himself. And that is kind of that isn't that kind to him.
I question, like, you don't care what a film's about. It's important to me. I kind of want to. I feel like this is a minor key pop song. This shouldn't be hard work to unpick what it's about.
No.
And I think it's very confused in its in what it's about.
I think that's fair. It's not that I don't care about it, and when we talk about it, I'm interested. What I mean is, I don't think about it when I'm watching it. I think I have a more passive experience of watching films, and when I'm prompted to, I become interested and discuss. And so, as it relates to this film, there are these strange cut sequences within the film where we have the children in Gozza's class looking directly down the camera and delivering little monologues about the civil rights movement in America. So, you know, little parts of this film running all the way through are describing to us the history of the civil rights movement. And I watch those bits, and it's the one time in the film where I think, what is... I don't get, like, why we're having this bit. I don't understand how it's relevant to the... Yeah, he's teaching this stuff in the class, but is it linked in a clever way to the story that I'm... beyond the obvious kind of, complicated inner city racial American dynamic thing? Is it linked in a clever way to the narrative that I'm not seeing? Maybe that's the white and the satire of the white savior thing.
But you said, you know, the head teacher comes and says, have you taught the civil rights binder?
Yeah.
So then is the film saying, yeah, he has, and more. Look how smart they are.
Maybe.
Or is this film, the film is kind of shot with this kind of, it's realism.
Yeah.
It kind of strives to realism, but then it has these jarring straight to camera shots from the kids. And then there is also this underlying, it feels like what it's about is, and he gives these lessons in school, so it's very handy having a teacher be the main character of your film, because you can just have him deliver various themes.
So oh, that's good. I'd never thought about that before, but that's real cheat code, isn't it?
Oh, it's such a cheat code. If you want to start a movie, it happened in The Ninth Gate. If you've got a movie
Yeah.
Start it at a bloody lecture. This film exists in effectively a lecture. So repeatedly it can return to your hero, deliver the theme, which it keeps changing. But I think the theme is, it kind of crops up maybe midway through, is he talks about the machine and how we're all part of the machine. And I think that's what the film wants to be about. He talks about what is the machine, and the kids say, you know, the police, prisons, you're part of the machine, they say to him. And he's like, oh, yeah. And he makes a joke of it. So the whole crux of it is he's part of the machine, and Dre, the little sweet kid who finds him, she's part of the machine.
Yeah, and she's getting chewed up by the machine.
Exactly. And they all are. But I think that's what the film, I think, is hugely concerning, in that it wants to suggest that his suffering in the machine is as important as the suffering of...
The oppressed people within society.
Right.
Yeah, I agree. Please carry on.
There's one sequence, and I don't know if it's really smart or borderline offensive. It's right towards the end of the film. We're like deep in the second act. He goes for dinner at his parents, and he's drunk. He gets drunk. Everyone's drinking wine, and it's intercut, I think very pointedly,
yes,
with Dre, the kid, and her, like the sort of bad dude played by Anthony Mackie.
Mackie's back, by the way. It's our second Mackie.
Mackie's back. And they are dealing drugs, I think.
They're out there drug dealing, yeah. They're slinging. I believe that's what they call it.
So the film is contrasting white middle class drug use, wine, with the underclass, with an underclass of dealing drugs.
Yes.
And I'm watching this and I'm thinking, I don't know what you're saying and I don't like it.
Well, he's saying, you know, we all know what it's trying to say.
What's he trying to say? Tell me.
It's trying to say, hey, is it really that different? Look at what's happening here, yeah? Is it really, you know, this thing on the one hand, this wine, smell it. It smells like earthy grapes, you know? Could it really be? Isn't that like the height of culture? The monks that wrote books, the first books, they were drinking wine. You know, the president of America drinks wine. But these people, these underclass people here, these, dare I say it, black people are dealing drugs. And hey, guys, isn't it all the same? And on the one hand, you go, it's kind of the same. Yeah. And on the other hand, you say, well, no, it's not the same at all, really. I mean, it's actually quite different. And they're separate scenarios and shouldn't ever be put together. It reminds me of the, it's an often and a very, I think, valuable a piece of information which is talked about and discussed regularly in American society as it relates to drug use, the different criminal penalties that the people suffer as a result of using cocaine or using crack, right? Which in terms of, you know, chemically speaking, are not dissimilar drugs. But crack has been historically predominantly used within African-American communities, and cocaine is a more expensive drug, which has been predominantly used in white middle-class communities in America. One of those carries a much lengthier prison sentence than the other, and it's been used, I think, fairly as an example of racial discrimination and, you know, two different class systems in America. I think the film is trying to make a point like that, but they can't have, you know, Gosling can't go home and everyone does cocaine. Like, it doesn't work in the family home. I think that's what it's trying to do. And I get the point it's trying to make, and I think it's a well-intentioned point. And I think it's reaching a bit.
It's not just reaching a bit. It's so lost. If you want to get into that story, and it is a heartbreaking and horrifying and very interesting story, watch the film The House I Live In, a great documentary, and it's all about the war on drugs, and the very thing you just spoke about.
Or watch The Wire.
Or, I mean, you can, or you can watch a documentary, but you could also watch The Wire. So this is why I want my, I want a film. I want to know what a film's about.
Yeah,
you know, I want to be on safe ground, and if I'm not, if I'm unsettled, I want to know that the filmmaker is unsettling me for a reason.
Yeah,
I'm in safe hands.
No, I'm with you. I'm with you on that. And I would say I really like your view of the film as a satire of the white savior storyline. And I would add one thing to that, which viewed through that prism is good. Viewed outside of it is up for discussion. You referred before to this idea of the machine, and Goz is in the classroom talking about what's the machine with the kids. It's the man, it's the system. And how that's bad, right? And that's what people say when they're talking about, it's the machine, it's the system, guys. They're talking about this big, you know, faceless bureaucratic corporatocracy that keeps them down and crushes them underfoot, you know, under the foot of the finance king. But also, very unpopular view, elements of the machine are there for safeguarding. So, for example, to prevent a child walking in on a teacher, an authority figure, you know, a person who's supposed to be responsible for them, walking in on a teacher taking drugs, yeah, or you know, passed out in a in the girls' locker room in a middle school in America, right? The system, one of the reasons it is designed is to try to prevent those sorts of things happening and to safeguard children. And this film is a really perfect example of that going horribly wrong. And I think also the follow-up, like, it's hard to not watch it and think, is this, yeah, is this your satire of white savior thing? Is this a fun sort of, you know, the fun inner city school America story? Or is this like a how-to grooming guide? Because, you know, she discovers him in a vulnerable position, having taken drugs. Here he is, an authority figure. The power dynamic is flipped. She is a child. And then he asks her to keep it a secret. And they have a special secret together. And then he drives her home and she pretends to lose the key and he takes it back to his house and they have a special secret together and they have a special relationship and they keep building more secrets and more relationships to the point where I think, like, this is a grooming film. This is a film about grooming. Like, I'm not saying that's what this film is about or that the Ryan Gosling character is going to do that, but that's why it's unsettling.
But that's not what the film is engaged. That's why this is a fantasy. So this is the problem, is it's got the realist trappings and it wants to be about something. It kind of wants to shine a light on white, maybe satirize this kind of this idea of a white savior who's trying to help but really is useless because they are whacked out of their gourd.
Yeah, but then a pathetic failure.
Yeah, but then at the same time, it kind of has this kind of Leon fantasy.
Yeah,
whereby you've got this very you have a very grown up child who starts to kind of look after and look out for the grown man. There's a really weird scene at a school dance. Where he starts to kind of almost, kind of,
it's grinds. It's a bump and grind. The film does not shy away from showing you that this girl has a thing for Gozers, and why wouldn't she? He's a sexy older teacher, cool young guy, is available. He gives her attention. She, you know, her mum is working all the time. Her brother is in jail, and here's this guy. Like, it doesn't, it tells you that from the beginning. The first scenes with her in are of her gazing lovingly at the teacher. Like, so it's there in the text, right?
Right. And then let's jump to the end, because I don't know how much road there is in this chat. Because at the end, she's back at his flat. He shaves to suggest he's cleaning his act up.
Yeah.
They have a little joke, and then, like, is this Lolita? But I don't think I've been watching that film. The filmmakers haven't told me I'm watching that film. They've told me I'm watching a film about race relations.
Yeah.
And The Machine. I'm not watching a film about an adult teacher accidentally or deliberately
accidentally grooming.
Because you would, if you watch this film, they position Daniel Dunn as a kind of a well-meaning, feckless kind of guy. Even when he sexually assaults his co-worker,
yeah,
the film positions him as a kind of someone to kind of be someone who should be forgiven.
Yeah.
And is this, there's no, if this film is suggesting it's like working on multi-level layers of like, oh no, we meant to do that, I just don't buy it. I just think it's really sloppy.
That's the question, isn't it? Because perhaps it doesn't earn it. But you know, what if this guy keeps taking drugs, right? He's trying to forget something. Whenever he has sex with women, he has to take a lot of drugs to get out of his head before he does it. Maybe he's a pedo. Maybe he's trying to suppress his desires, his illicit desires.
That's not what the film's about.
No, I know it's not. I'm making that up.
The thing is, they would wish it was about that.
That's
a more interesting film.
Yeah.
There's this fantastic film with Maggie Gyllenhaal. And I'm gonna break the rule of saying like or not like. This is a superb film.
Uh-huh.
It's called The Kindergarten Teacher.
It's
a remake. And it's
isn't it Gyllenhaal?
It doesn't matter.
It does.
It doesn't matter. It's Gyllenhaal. I think
it's Gyllenhaal. Gyllenhaal.
I like to say Gyllenhaal.
Jake, do you say Jake Gyllenhaal?
I say like Jake. Oh, maybe I do. I say Jake Gyllenhaal and Maggie Gyllenhaal.
And that, in which case, that's absolutely fine. And let's have that as the style guide for the podcast going forward.
That's what I say.
Yeah. So it's got Maggie Gyllenhaal in it.
And it's phenomenal. It's she's a primary school teacher and she becomes sort of slowly obsessed by the idea that one of her students, a little young, I think he's from the Latin American region.
Yeah.
One of those countries.
Yeah.
She becomes obsessed with the idea that he's an amazing poet. And she slowly but surely starts to kind of abuse her position to kind of give him a chance to express himself. But that film, it sets up, you know what it's about.
Mm-hmm.
It's still art house.
Yeah.
And it's fantastic.
Okay, I should watch it. It looked grim, so I didn't watch it.
It's not grim. It's not grim at all. It's just, okay. It's really, really, really good. This is not really, really, really good.
It's a minor key pop song. It hits its beats. I know what to expect from it. I remembered everything as soon as the film began.
As soon as the film began, I knew everything.
Hey, how about this? How about you?
What's your thing?
No, I was going to move us on, but if you've got more, you can carry on.
No, I was going to move us on too.
I got a quick thing.
Yeah, okay.
I got two different, you said at the beginning, secrets hold on, or whatever the tagline was, yeah?
Yeah.
I got a couple of taglines for this movie. How about it? You want to hear some?
Yes,
true. Here's one. Let me tell you this one. Here we go. Man leans against walls. That's my tagline for this film. Because he does a lot of leaning against the wall. It's a very full body performance from Gosser's.
It's not full bodied, it's tick heavy. He does this thing where I was going to put my hand in front of my mouth, but it affected my mic technique. It's like he smooths his little beard down.
It's tick heavy, yeah, yeah.
Look at me, I am an actor.
He is an actor.
Yeah, and that's why it's a bad performance.
myself up as a fucking asshole.
Do you want to play the Ryan Gosling game?
I really want to play the Ryan Gosling game. What's that?
So the Ryan Gosling game is assign the Gosling to the film, okay? So we've got, you've got sexy liberal prick. You've got dirty sexy prick.
Yeah.
You've got boring sexy prick. Or you've got violent sexy prick.
Right.
Okay? So yeah. That's your Goslings. Murder by Numbers.
Haven't seen that film.
It's called Murder by Numbers.
Okay, is he violent sexy prick?
Yes.
Bingo. Bingo, bango, bongo.
The Notebook.
Ah, now, this is interesting. Boring sexy prick.
Yes.
Yeah, he's so boring in that film. They both are. I wish they were both dead in that film.
Half Nelson.
Liberal sexy prick.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, no, you've written sexy liberal prick, so that's slightly different, but yeah, we know what we're saying. We know what we're saying.
Fracture.
I haven't seen Fracture.
You haven't seen many of these films?
No.
It's a legal thriller. He plays a lawyer investigating Anthony Hopkins for a murder.
Oh, boring sexy prick?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Great, 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 great.
Lars and the Real Girl.
Well, I'm just guessing. What's the film about?
That's about him. He plays a guy who has an inflatable girl for a girlfriend.
Oh, dirty sexy prick.
Yeah, he's dirty. He's okay, dirty in that.
Great.
Bad boy. Dirty boy. The good thing with the dirty sexy prick is it's got multiple meanings.
Yeah, that's true, yeah.
Because we're going to get to the other kind of dirty.
Oh, yes, please.
Blue Valentine.
I feel like I've seen Blue Valentine.
Oh, you should have, yeah.
What's it about?
It's told in reverse. It's the kind of disintegration of a marriage between him and Michelle Williams.
Oh, do you know what? You could have got me on Forget Me Not, the film with Blue Valentine. I guess in that one, he's probably a doidy sexy prick.
Drive.
Okay, Drive is violent sexy prick.
Yes. Yeah. Crazy Stupid Love.
Boring sexy prick.
There we go. You're playing the game.
You probably could have got sexy liberal prick, but he is a little bit kind of he's a little bit right leaning in that movie, isn't he?
The Ides of March.
Well, now I haven't seen this film, I don't think, but I'm going to say boring sexy prick or dirty sexy prick because it's some kind of legal drama, right?
Yeah, but it's more like I'd say he's a liberal sexy prick in
that. Oh, okay, he's a liberal sexy prick.
It's a Clooney.
Everyone's a liberal in a Clooney film, huh?
We finally get to The Place Beyond the Pines.
Dirty, he's a violent, sexy prick.
He's a dirty.
He is also dirty because he's covered in dirt, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. With his hair, with his bleach blonde hair in that film. And I think, oh, the first half of this film's really good. What's going to happen? Oh.
Gangster Squad.
He's a squeaky, sexy prick.
He's a squeaky. That's the bonus. You've invented the new category.
Thank you.
Only God Forgives.
Have I? Oh, that's another of that.
It's a Renf.
Renf. Reffin, right?
Yeah.
It's another Reffin. I haven't seen it, so I'm going to say he's a boring, sexy prick.
He's a violent, sexy prick in that.
Boring, violent, it's all the same thing.
We'll wrap this up very soon. The Big Short.
Well, he's a dirty, sexy prick in that.
And Nice Guys.
In Nice Guys, I'm not certain that any of these fit into Nice Guys, which I quite enjoyed that film.
This is the category. This is the film that invented a new category for him. This is the goofy sexy prick.
Yeah.
Which he will start doing more of.
That's right. Okay.
Certainly in the upcoming film Barbie. And let's end with La La Land for some reason.
La La Land is probably boring sexy prick.
Yeah, boring sexy prick.
Jazz boring guy.
Blade Runner 2043.
Oh, is there simmering sexy prick in here? Shimmering? Is that
boring sexy prick?
Yeah, okay.
That's enough. There we go. That's the game. It's a good game, isn't it?
I tell you what, he is a sexy prick though, isn't he? He really is. He really is. And I really rate him.
Really?
I do, yeah. Like he's so, I find him to be subjectively so watchable. I will watch a film if he's in it, and I will enjoy the performance, even if it irritates me.
But you haven't seen most of the films I just listed.
Well, I mean, I'd never heard of many of them. It's a discoverability issue, really. Now I know they exist, I'm going to watch them all immediately.
I mean, they're all there on the old IMDb's.
Well, I don't make a habit of just going on Gaza's IMDb page.
But you just said you'd watch anything he was in and you'd hoover it up.
As and when it presents itself to me, I'm not actively looking for... Listen, the theme of this podcast for you should be my passivity, yeah? When things come a cropper, Joe's all hopper, you know what I'm saying? But before that, the sea's got to wash over me, my guy. I'm not surfing.
Don't tell me what the theme is or that my podcast needs to be about something.
Your podcast?
I fucking invented... things being about something, yeah? How dare you?
How dare you? I invented things being about something.
Yeah.
That's a good line. do you want to play the budget game? Let's play the motherfucking budget game. Okay, here we go. It's budget time for Half Nelson. Now, I'd like you to guess the brackets estimated budget of this film.
Yeah, that's what we always do. And I love how you string out those pauses.
Thank you.
And this is going to be a smaller film, so it's going to be a harder guess. As we know, I'm going to say it cost... it's small, but it's not that small. $8 million.
Well, you are... over 10 times, a factor of 10 removed, Adam Richman, because the estimated budget here is $700,000.
Wow.
I mean, it's super cheap.
Wow, that's really impressive.
It is impressive. And
I wish they fucking sorted the script out before they did it.
Okay, gross US and Canada. No, sorry, we didn't do that. Opening weekend. Okay, opening weekend US and Canada, please. And it was released August 13th, 2006. So this actually is a summer one. Maybe I did see it.
That's the US, mate. It would have come out a lot later.
I forget about where I am.
You're in England. So it comes out in summer in America. It's not coming out. It probably would have only come out after it would have got some sort of awards buzz.
Maybe it would have come out in the January.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Well, anyway, what do you think it did in its opening weekend in the US and Canada?
I mean, we're talking tuppence. Tuppence a bag. I don't know. You said, let's say 80 grand.
I mean, you're not far off. It did a sweet 54 grand.
Oof, okay.
That's it. That's the
I'm getting
weekend,
a sense
right
now, the lower end.
I think we're at the lower end.
Yeah.
Gross worldwide, Half Nelson.
It definitely cleaned its face. Absolutely. It got the flannel, popped on the bloody, you know, Pears soap.
The Pears soap?
Yeah, Pears.
Wow.
Popped on the Pears and it really...
got a scrubbing.
Okay, let's get rid of that.
Oh, no, don't get rid of that. That's good. That what are you talking about? He popped it on the Pears. Honestly, it's my favourite bit so far when you said it got the flannel.
Okay, fine.
Lean into it, saying it got a scrubbing on that face.
Go on, yeah.
Tearing apart all those pores.
Yeah, I felt like it was really struggling to be funny.
No, this is what I want. This is where, you know, this is your problem. You don't know when you're being funny. That's really funny.
But that's, if I then start really thinking like, oh, this will be funny, then that's problematic, isn't it?
No, just the thing is, this is a safe space here. You give it a try. If you don't think it's funny when you come to the edit or afterwards, we lose it.
Okay.
But don't cut yourself halfway through.
No, okay, yeah, fine.
I'd say keep all this in.
It's all clean. This is as clean as its face was, film's face.
Yeah.
Only 700. I reckon we definitely came over here to this bit of the world.
It came over here. It filled all our cinemas, did it?
I think, and it still kind of ticked over. I think it would have been earning for a good couple of years. Oh, I really want to get this right.
Yeah.
10 million.
Well, you've under-egged the pudding there. It's 100 million. No, I'm joking. It's $4.6 million gross worldwide.
I mean, that's that's a really solid return.
It's a good return. I mean, hey, for a Bouget that's of 700k, that's not bad at all, my friend. And I imagine they didn't spend, at least initially, $700,000 promoting that film. I'm sure the awards circuit did a job of its own.
No, Joe, you have got no idea how this fucking works, mate.
How does it work?
As soon as this gets any kind of buzz or heat, the people who have spent the money...
The people? The audience?
The production company.
The production company?
Well, actually not the production company. The studio... Yes. Actually, this,
the distributors.
Joe, you've got no idea what you're talking about.
No, this is
about.
Perfect.
Yeah. The distributors who snap this up,
they
spend that money on it more than because they've bought it. It costs $700,000 to make. It would have been snapped up for a lot more than that because Buzz. This would have had serious, at least, you know, double the marketing budget. That's why it's made 4 million.
You think it's going to be a $1.5 million marketing budget? I mean, that's impressive.
I don't know. At least it's at least the same as the budget.
One day we should get at someone least. On who's like who works in this area to explain it to me. Good.
Well, it's just. It's all on the internet.
Yeah.
It's the budget. Sometimes it's twice the budget.
Yeah.
If you don't market the film, right? No one sees the film. Okay. How much it costs.
I believe you, but I believe you whatever you say. But in the previous episode, you've said it was 50%, and other times you've said it's 100%. Now you're saying it's 200%, but you shout it at me every time. And so I don't understand where the anger's coming from.
That's
I suppose
part
is what
of
I'm
it.
Saying.
Part of it is me changing the number.
Right.
But all you need to know is it's a figure related to the budget. It could be half. It could be the same.
Yeah.
It could be double.
It could be anything.
The point is, it is inextricably linked to the budget. Okay?
Yeah, it could be 33% of or 34%
no,
of or
35%
no,
of.
It's either
50%.
100 or 200.
Exactly the same.
That's it.
Or double. It's always those three things. And anyone who tells you anything different doesn't know their onions.
Don't believe them. We've got a secret, you and me.
I'm not going to be gainsayed on this.
No, I won't. I'm not trying to gainsay you.
Don't gainsay me on this.
I won't gainsay you. It's fine.
It's one of my few things that I know about.
Yeah. Hey, is this canon?
Absolutely not.
Yeah, it's not, is it?
I would say the sexual assault and him doing an Indian accent make this film very much not canon.
Yeah.
Shall we do... What we're doing next week, game.
Oh, yeah. It's your turn to read out a list of things I have never seen.
This is the part of the podcast where one of us reads out a long list of films in the hope of catching the other one out with a film they forgot, or a movie they forgot. So let's go. From Hell.
I've never seen it.
Office Christmas Party.
I have seen it, but I actually watched it relatively recently.
It's quite fun, actually. I quite liked it.
I enjoyed it.
71.
I've never seen that, but I have seen the cover. The another one.
It's all right. It would have worked really well for this one. 300.
I could never forget that film.
Run, Lola, Run.
Never seen it.
The Darjeeling Limited.
I would never forget that because it's the first Wes Anderson film that I watched and didn't like it.
Assassins. Yeah, it's one of those ones that could be any film.
Oh. I mean, it is very possible I've seen it and forgotten it, but I can't confirm that for you.
Yeah, I'm thinking of the Sly Stallone.
I've not seen this film.
Logan.
No. Oh, wait. The Wolverine.
Yeah.
You have got me with that. I completely I forgot that so hard that I just instinctively said no when you said it.
I mean, that's a hard wait, what? No?
Holy shit. I saw that in the cinema. That's quite good, isn't it?
I mean, this is going to be one of those rare ones because this is exactly in the kind of wheelhouse.
Yeah.
I saw this. I've never rewatched this film. I saw it in the cinema.
Neither have I. Yeah, man. Same.
I love Wolverine.
I liked it too. And I remember there being a lot of really fun jokes between Patrick Stewart and Wolverine. I like it when you say one actor name and then the character name for the other person. That's funny.
You like your own jokes, do you?
I didn't mean it on purpose.
You like your own lovely jokes.
I love it when I make
a joke about.
I'm imagining Patrick Stewart having a conversation with Wolverine. You know.
Okay. Well, next week's episode is going to be fantastic to record.
Oh.
When you just do that for the entire thing. I think this film is going to have dated very poorly.
Oh.
I tried to rewatch it and got bored after the first 5 minutes.
Oh.
And so swiftly, I'm really annoyed that you forgot it.
Right. Do you know, I feel like we say that every week, whichever one of us it is that reads the list, when a film is chosen, selected by the other, there's an air of disappointment, isn't there? There's a sort of sense of being let down.
But this will be a good one because it's it should be fun.
We haven't done a superhero film.
It's action. It's kind of modern. It's probably the most modern one we've done.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you what, it'll really piss off the fanboys, all the fanboys who've subscribed to the podcast since we started.
Yeah.
They'll be like, how could you have forgotten Logan?
That's true. They will say that, yeah.
They'll be livid.
They'll say, how dare you forget Logan, the best of the superhero films? And also with our king, our Australian king. What's his name? I love that guy. Hugh Jackman. He's great. I love Hugh Jackman. And he's fucking ripped, isn't he?
Yeah, so you love Ryan Gosling and you love Hugh Jackman.
I like a strong leading actor. That's what I'm saying. I like someone and I feel like with Hugh, you're in safe hands. I think you are. He knows how to hold.
Oh, sorry. You're talking about the actor. Oh God, that's embarrassing. Oh God, I'm really embarrassed myself.
Sometimes I forget you have children. You know.
Oh no, we're going to have to end the episode now. I've really put my foot in it.
You're so proud of yourself. Fucking end it. Say goodbye.
Okay, goodbye.
Good you.